Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hi, I'm Scott Hahn, and I'd like to invite you personally to join me and Breadbox Media on August 24th in New Oxford, Pennsylvania, for a day of spiritual renewal. I'll be presenting three talks, one on St. Joseph, one on the sacrament of matrimony, and another one on the Holy Eucharist. Learn more and register at breadboxmedia.com/PA conference. I hope to see you there.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. Call InventHelp today.
Call 1-800-358-7816. That's 1-800-358-7816.
This is Charles Osgood. Since auto owners insurance began in 1916, the world has entered the information age of computers, email, and smartphones. While technology continues to advance, we believe people help people best. That's why you'll only find auto owner's insurance from your local independent agent, a real person who protects your life, family, and business. Auto owner's insurance, 100 years of putting people first. Find your local independent agent at autoowners.com. That's autoowners.com.
The Stanley Cup Final is underway in Pittsburgh. The home team Penguins are tied 2-2 with the San Jose Sharks.
San Jose is in the championship round for the first time in its 25-year history, while the Penguins are looking to capture their fourth cup and first since 2009. Both regular season meetings went to a shootout, with each team winning at home. I'm Al Smith.
Will Brazil be ready for the Summer Olympics?
2 months before the start of the games, construction crews are putting in the final touches at the Olympic venues.
Everything is going to be ready on time. We're going to deliver the park fully commissioned the 24th of July.
But despite Rio's beauty, the city and Brazil as a whole are facing some pretty daunting challenges. A whole series of unexpected setbacks. Just days ago, a warning from more than 100 international doctors calling for the games to be postponed or moved because the mosquito-borne Zika virus could threaten an expected 500,000 foreign visitors.
Correspondent Ivan Watson, I'm Jim Asendio.
A Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 400,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
GEICO applauds your inner journey seeker.
GEICO gives a hearty pat on the back to the part of you that just wants to get out and ride your motorcycle, to take to the open road, and let the wind and bugs fly your way. In fact, bring on the bugs. They can't stop your quest for highway enlightenment. GEICO insures not only your car, but also that fine-looking bike of yours, with a custom-tailored policy and the best rates for you. So next time you suit up for adventure, make sure to take GEICO along for the ride.
GEICO Motorcycle. See how much you could save.
Hey, good evening. Good evening, everybody. Hey, good evening, my fellow truth seekers. Glad Hello. You could join us tonight here at WCAP 980 AM, where everybody gets it. And welcome to Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet. Here tonight and every Monday night until 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our culture, into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. All right, tonight, ladies and gentle things, together we delve beneath the surface on the topic of sexuality and natural law. That's last week. One essential element that separates us from all the other animals is our ability to think. It's what makes us human. Then why is it? Then when it comes to issues relating to sexuality and gender, We reject thought, reason, and science. It's a question to ask, and to assist us in answering that question and others, and to unlock the mystery and the hypocrisy behind all of this is my guest and yours. In fact, when you look up the word guest in the dictionary, you see his big smiling head, Mr. Mr. Bob LeBlanc.
My head.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that what you see when you look up guest?
Look up guest, my head? I don't think so.
That
I don't,
big that, smiling Bob head.
Yeah, I'm smiling right now, but that is interesting.
You don't even see a neck. You just see the big round smiling head of you.
Floating head that's smiling.
It's right there next to the definition.
Yeah.
In fact, in place of the definition.
In place of
there is no words definition. It's just your smiling head. Anyway, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you game?
I feel welcome. I am game.
Yeah? Can you breathe beneath here?
The surface?
Yes. Good.
I'm thinking of myself in that submarine going beneath the surface.
Yes, you bet.
Searching out these truths that are beneath the surface.
And you are an ex-submariner, so you know what it means to be beneath the surface as a Navy man. Here on Memorial Day night, 2016, I want to thank everybody for getting us on the air tonight. My name is Paul Morano. This is Beneath the Surface that you're listening to. We're here until 11 p.m., like we are every Monday night. Ladies and gentle things, tonight, our topic, sacrifice and martyrdom. We will delve into the phenomenon of people giving themselves to the point of giving their own lives for a worthy cause. Why do people do this? Seems to be a universal phenomenon. And an apropos topic for tonight, Memorial Day 2016. And to assist us in this endeavor are my two guests tonight. Not just one, but two. Mr. John Tudoris and Mr. Robert LeBlanc. Gentlemen, welcome.
Where?
You guys are gentlemen. You're not gentle cats. No, you're not gentle dogs either. No. All right. So, guys, don't lap him up, John. Remember, you got to play the human tonight. The human.
Oh, yeah, yes.
There it is. There it is. That's the voice we need.
Yes.
You got it?
Yes.
All right. Try that one for a while. I know it doesn't come natural to you. So, our call-in number tonight here at BTS Radio is 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. If you'd like to chime in on this or any other topic, or you can simply jot down your thoughts at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All right, gentlemen.
Where?
This is a very interesting, I consider it fascinating, certainly a serious topic of the notion of sacrifice and martyrdom. This is something that people in the military have been doing since the beginning of time. And people outside of the military have been doing for what is considered a greater cause. I guess my first question to you two, my fellow philosophical types, is what kind of worldview or understanding of life does a person need to have in order to do this?
I can answer definitely in one way what it's not.
Okay, this is Bob LeBlanc. Bob, you were a member of the service for a number of years.
Yes, I was.
Okay. Tell me what it's not.
Well, it's definitely cannot be an individualistic sort of view. Otherwise, I don't see that it would make any sense. If you exalt the individual far above any other concerns,
So a person cannot think of life as individualistic.
Right.
Okay. What does that mean? What is the contrary to that?
Well, I think...
We are individuals, aren't we?
We are individuals, right. But we also are by nature, human beings are social, communal.
Okay.
And the opposite view wouldn't necessarily be communism, but just maybe commutarian. Where it's, you know, where you're talking about a community of people rather than simply the individual.
So somebody has to value the community.
Right.
Not only themselves.
Yeah, well, we talk about it often on the show. We talk about something being the common good.
Yeah.
And that needs to be recognized. Otherwise,
all right,
this self-sacrifice doesn't make any sense.
All right, here's something that it's just such a question that needs to be asked about this. In order to give your life for others, do you have to believe that there is an afterlife waiting for you? In other words, is your future something that is important to the martyr, to one's own future?
Religious, yes. Political, not necessarily.
Then, all right. Let's start with political then. So you're recognizing two different kinds of martyrdom.
Yes.
All right. For political martyrs, what's in it for them? And that sounds like a selfish question, but on some level, isn't that important on some level to everybody by virtue of our nature?
What the political and the religious martyrs share with each other is that they're giving themselves, at least on paper, to something that is greater than them. So in the political cause,
but they don't get to share in it because they're dead.
There's certain noble quality to give yourself for something other than you.
But you don't even experience the nobility because you're dead. You see what I'm saying?
Well, so
what does the political martyr? I can understand the religious martyr, and we'll get to that in a moment. But what motivates the political martyr?
Sometimes people are inconsistent. I wouldn't say that a person who does not believe in God or some sort of afterlife will not be capable of this self-sacrifice. I just find it unlikely that they would. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think more in more ancient societies than at least now in this modern Western society, there was a very high concept of honor. And so you viewed the family as well. So
I'm trying to understand concept of honor. If you're not there to experience it,
let me finish. Okay. Like a good scene to call upon is in The Godfather. There was this. The lawyer type person. I don't know what you call him in the mafia. The
lawyer.
Yeah, it was played by. I can't. Robert Duvall. He played the consigliere. I think that was the name for it. What his job was to do. There was somebody that was testifying against the family.
Okay.
The mafia family. And then what he did is he reminded them of Roman times. What a Roman senator or somebody high up in power would do to save the honor of himself and his family, and that was to commit suicide, you know. And so that's exactly what in the movie this guy did.
He was
in the witness protection program, and he slit his wrists and he bled into a bathtub, you know, full of water, and he died in order to protect the honor of himself and his family. So he viewed the higher good of his family.
This is what I'm hearing. Among other things, that he was willing to die to protect his honor.
Right.
As well as his family's. But let's just stay with his for a moment. When somebody is dead, and I'm not talking about a religious martyr because they believe that something wonderful is coming up if they martyr themselves for what is of God. But the more political or secular martyr that we're talking about here, if one is dead, how does one experience this honor?
I'm not sure if they necessarily do, but they are looking out for an other for the good of their family is looked at as something more than just their individual good.
I'm trying to understand if there isn't an afterlife and if there isn't a reward, a believed reward after the martyrdom, why somebody would die for some other cause.
I think there's a certain mystery to it in that people often don't realize what it is that they're giving themselves for. I mean, even the smartest of people, there's a certain amount of unknown, of course. But in these areas, particularly the political martyrdoms where you're giving yourself for whatever revolution or whatever it is. Maybe you're in war,
right?
And there's a certain sense of sacrifice, but what are you getting out of it? Maybe there's a sense of honor, like Bob's talking about, where those after you, maybe they honor your name. Maybe it's a saving of a family name.
You don't experience it yourself, but you value the reputation that you have from people afterwards. So in a sense, you're absorbed into the community.
Well, like in Japan,
the community is
very
more
difficult for modern 21st century Americans like myself to grasp.
I think because we're so individualistic, that's why you have
that a person can be or feel fulfilled or sense a fulfillment in going towards what he believes is everlasting non-existence, which is death, in order that some that reputations and name may be good, even though he doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I actually remember a good friend who thought was very kind of archaic in that sense. He thought it was very important to preserve his family name. You know, that was so very important to them. He would do things that you wouldn't expect a person in modern America to do to preserve his own family name.
Was he religious?
In and out.
Okay.
You know, it's not consistently so.
Okay, so his inness or his outness wouldn't make any difference.
I don't think it would.
He would die for that.
He would die for that. I sincerely believe that. And in fact, in C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man, and I wrote it down for this specific show, is that he quotes a kind of a proverb or saying from Roman times, you know, from ancient Rome.
Yeah.
Something a father would tell his son: it is sweet and seemly to give your life for one's country.
Well, everybody else experiences the sweetness and the seemliness, but when you don't exist anymore, you don't.
But
I'm trying to understand the reason.
Yeah, but I think you need to be able to see beyond the individual and see the community as a good in order to do that.
No, I understand that. I'm trying to get into the mind of the martyr who has no religious belief.
Uh-huh.
How does he experience the good of the community after he stops existing?
Well,
in his own mind,
I think rationally it will break down. I think rationally it will, if he actually thought about it.
Yeah.
I think it would rationally that would start breaking down.
But
you notice all sorts of things where people believe things, but that if they thought about it, they'd eventually find a contradiction where that would kind of blow.
But
a belief out of the water.
But this one is huge because it has to do with giving your own life.
I do understand that, but I still would maintain that an atheist could give his life for his country.
And I would agree with that, but I don't understand it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
and I'm trying to with you.
I think one thing to understand is not everybody goes beneath the surface as totally as we do here on this radio show, There are things that people learn when they're very young that they don't let go of. So I could see a person who maybe was raised in a Christian family saw the value of self-sacrifice.
Okay.
But became an atheist later on and not putting the two things together, you know.
So there's this inner, almost intuitive belief. That even though it contradicts their own beliefs and other things, you know what? I need more understanding on this after the break. Give me more light, gentlemen. 978-454-4980 is our phone area here at Beneath the Surface Radio. And if you have any insight on this very fascinating topic, an important one, give us a call, 978-454-4980, Memorial Day 2016. I'm Paul Morano, that's Bob and John. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. 978-454-4980, our phone number here at BTS Radio. Memorial Day 2016, we're talking about sacrifice in martyrs, the fascinating phenomenon. My guests tonight, again, are Bob LeBlanc and John Tudoris. And gentlemen, any last thoughts about the notion of being able to give your own life for others or for a cause if you yourself do not believe that there's an afterlife? I guess I don't fully understand this, but maybe one last thought and we'll move on.
I'll reiterate the point that I made during the break.
Okay.
Which is that you often see this more so with younger people. So if this is following up on Bob's comment about a lot of people just not really thinking it through, so to speak. Why am I giving myself for something if there's no ultimate reward in the end? If I don't think there is one. And that's why if people survive that phase of their life when they think that way and they get older, some people might say, well, you're a little more jaded. Maybe not so much jaded as they've thought through it before and they're actually looking for answers. They haven't found it. And that's why they may no longer believe such high and noble things, there, so to speak.
There is this. I mean, it's something that I think we know as moderns, as a physiological, psychological fact, yeah. Is that about 25, 26 is when the brain finally finishes its maturity. Most of the time, people recognize that young people under that age do wild and crazy things that really don't evaluate the risks of life and death.
Or think about the consequences.
Or think about the consequences. And it's probably a reason why we draft, 18-year-olds rather than 30-year-olds.
Well, that's a cruel trick, isn't it?
But it seems to follow through. People who are younger don't seem to make that evaluation of life and death in the same way.
Yeah, but what you're saying is the government assesses that younger people are not as intelligent and they won't think about this, so we can sort of spare them.
They're not as wise.
Yeah, and
not
hence,
necessarily
and we'll put them in
death.
We'll put them in harm's way, and they won't complain as much.
Well, yes. I guess it is a cynical thing, but it's always been kind of true that the younger have been the ones that have been going into battle, the ones that have been conscripted, even before there was that psychological knowledge of that. I think there was some sort of idea it'd be much easier to do it for this age group rather than this other age group.
Yeah, but now we have technology, and we often fight from afar. So all of that,
that's a different sort of
all of that 18-year-old youth energy isn't all that necessary anymore.
Well, in this country, because we have the technology, but the others where they don't, not so much.
All right, Bob, you were in the Navy for how many years?
Well, active duty about 7 years, total years around 12, 13, something like
that. Okay, so I understand you to be a you believe yourself to be a patriot.
Yes, I do.
You would consider yourself patriotic.
Yeah.
Okay.
As opposed to nationalistic.
Right. So you understand firsthand, through experience, what it means to be ready to martyr oneself for one's country.
I'm not sure if I think I'm going to go back to that. I didn't really think that much about death that way. I think I'm going back to I was very young. I think I was 18 when I enlisted in the Navy, and I didn't really give that much thought about that.
Well, you knew there was a chance that your submarine could be blown up.
Yeah, that's and in fact, I didn't when I joined the service. I didn't want to be on submarines.
Okay, but you did, and you knew this.
Yeah, I knew this, and they gave hazardous duty pay as well as submarine pay. There was maybe they were the same, but there was a certain danger. Even though the last submarine that didn't return home was in, I think, 1968 or something like that.
Okay.
There's still a danger of a submarine going down and not coming back up again.
So when you were down there, when you were in the Navy, did you have this attitude that I'm ready and willing to die for my country?
I'm not sure if it ever really manifested in that sort of way. It was I was willing to fight for my country, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I gave much thought to dying for my country, other than maybe the way a child would have dreams of doing the the heroic thing, so to speak, and of that. But I don't think in any sort of realistic sense that I had, that I was dying for my country.
So then do you assess that most people who go into the armed services also don't think about this?
I think that's true. I think that's true, especially in the United States, there's this view. I think a lot of people join for, I had other reasons why I joined the military. One of them was to get an education.
And
things were cleaning up. This was, I was getting into the military during the Reagan years, and there was a certain professionalism that was instilled during Reagan's term of office that I think was very unique. You have to remember that after Vietnam and Jimmy Carter, there was, I think, a very serious morale issue throughout the United States military.
I do remember that, yeah.
The Reagan presidency turned that around. But then I do know this, that when it actually comes down to the fighting, especially when you're talking about people who are like infantry or on the ground and they're seeing bullets whiz and stuff like that, it turns out that you're not really fighting for country. You're fighting for your fellow soldiers and making sure that they come home alive.
I have heard that. So there are various reasons for joining the military, but once you're in battle and things are happening around you, you are there to protect those near you.
Right.
Okay.
And especially, well, I guess on a submarine, it would be sort of the same thing, except I'm not sure there was any real difference between being at war and not at war, because we were still fighting the environment. So there was, on a submarine, there was no room for a useless body, so to speak. Everybody had to pull together as a team in order for the success of the mission.
Yeah.
There was no real room for failure, so to speak. And so you had to be proficient at your job at the very, very least.
Okay. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio, talking about sacrifice and martyrdom. John, you had brought up the point here that we actually may be designed by our very nature to be self-giving, perhaps even to the point of giving one's life for another. Do you think this is natural to the human being?
Yes and no. Okay. Yes, in so much as that it's part of our being, but no, in that it doesn't naturally come about. It has to be fostered like a virtue. So... I'm sure a lot of people have heard this, whether or not they read scripture, no greater love than this, that a man lay down his life for a friend. And in a certain sense, that's what we would call agape love. In so much as that there's a complete self-gift of one to another or others.
Now that is a quote from New Testament scripture.
And the Jungle Book.
And the Jungle Book.
Baloo.
John 15:13.
But... Could you make the argument that you don't need to be religious in order for that principle to apply?
It's part of natural law. It's who we are to give ourselves for the sake of others. I mean, even marriage. Marriage is a natural law type of covenant, where a husband and wife basically pledge to give of themselves entire and full to each other.
Okay, so this may be beginning to answer my original question as to why we have this almost intuition or instinct to sacrifice for others, to even to the point of giving our lives for others. It's a part of our nature.
Yeah.
And when it comes to secular martyrdom, or for those who do not recognize God or an afterlife, it's something that you would, in a sense, you'd have to turn off because it's already there.
Yeah, you would have to turn it off.
Like other species of animals, right? It's part of their nature. You see mothers sacrificing themselves and, you know, ready to die.
In some instances.
A mother alligator to fight a lion to save their babies. So, yeah, in some instances, you see this in the animal kingdom. And that kind of intuitive, instinctual level, we have it in humans too, I suppose. Yes?
Yes, I would agree.
Oh, you'd agree with that. So it's part of our nature. Now, getting to religious martyrdom, you'd have to say that with the so-called secular martyrs, we have that human instinct, but we also have that supernatural help to do what, you know, what we could not do without it.
Oh, of course.
I mean, explain that.
Think about it. I mean, it's one thing to say, I'm with my family, I have a wife, I have children. Someone goes to attack my wife and children, and I protect them, and in doing so, I end up losing my life.
Yeah.
And that's because I can sense them. I know they're here. But then in a religious martyrdom, someone might say, for example, the Iconoclast Wars back in the, 300s, 400s, someone might say, these religious articles over here, I want you to go ahead and throw these away. And you say no, and they say, if you don't do that, we're going to kill you.
Mm.
Or if you if you don't publicly renounce your belief in that Jesus Christ is God, we're going to kill you, or we're going to take away property and possessions. We're going to punish you for this, for your belief in someone that you cannot sensibly interact with for all practical purposes. I mean,
right.
Tangentially
right.
speaking,
right.
in high points of Christianity and Catholicism, Orthodoxy, you have the Eucharist, which there is a sense interaction with, but not in the way that you see someone walking, talking, and conversing with you that
right.
you can sensibly see in the same room with you, so to speak. Nothing like that.
So what you're saying is it's in a sense, it's easier to give yourself, give your life for a family member or a fellow soldier in the foxhole or somebody that's near you in a situation than it is to give your life for the invisible God. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay, in one sense, it's easier.
In one sense, it's easier. Once someone gets to that high point of
yeah.
belief, though, where they are fully invested in it, in some ways, it's easier to give your life for that one God than it is for the other person. But only when someone's actually gotten to that point, because they recognize God as the first principle of everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's... so once somebody has that... that level of faith, you would
yes.
say, that then it would be a lot easier to sacrifice oneself for God rather than for one's fellow man.
Yes, although okay. I would also say, too, that yeah. when one gets to that point, they would actually see the sacrifice for the other. It may very well be one and the same as sacrificing themselves for God. You know, case in point, someone like Maximilian Kolbe, who is a somewhat of a famous martyr of Auschwitz.
Why don't you tell us his little story there?
So he was a Franciscan priest, and
okay.
like a lot of people, Hitler just didn't like. It wasn't just the Jews. It was religious. It was anyone he thought he was his enemy.
Yeah.
And so he was imprisoned, and long story short, they would routinely round up certain prisoners for whatever reason, with an excuse to kill them. In this case, someone tried to escape from the prison.
Okay.
And they basically said, if no one comes forward, as far as, you know, pointing out who the person was, we're going to execute 10 people. And Maximilian Kolbe was not one of the 10 that was picked. However, there was one man who did have a family, and he actually begged and pleaded, please don't kill me. I have a wife, I have children. And so what Maximilian Kolbe did is he stepped forward out of line. And by the way, that's something you never did there, because that in itself was also a death sentence.
Okay.
But he stepped forward and he said, please take me instead. I want to exchange my my place for his.
Why did he do that?
Because he wanted to save the man. He sacrificed himself for someone else. But in his case, it wasn't just to save the man. It's because in Maximilian Kolbe, he also saw that he was serving Christ, that he was saving Christ, because he had a high point of vision, and that he saw that others embodied Christ. So he goes to save that man. Whether or not that man is a Christian, he's going to help save Christ.
Interesting. So that would, of course, be even a higher motivation than just saving somebody that you know or somebody that you're working with.
Yes.
All right.
Well, and it's the same type of mentality mm. that Mother Teresa would
yeah.
have over the years when she went to go help all the poor in the gutters, the unwanted people, the abandoned children, and people would ask her, why do you do this? And, you know, is it because the work is so good? She goes, oh, no, this is terrible work. It's miserable work. but then she says, the reason why I do it is because I serve Jesus.
So would it be safe to say that most people martyr themselves out of love than out of what's in it for me?
At the high point of martyrdom, and yeah. particularly in a religion, you can only get that in the religious sense, and particularly in that Catholic sense, and by certain extension, Orthodoxy or Christianity, the broad sense, because that's where you find an agape type of love between God and His people. I mean, there's other religions where you find type of martyrs, such as Islam. I mean, if you watch the news, people have heard the word jihad a million times in one. Mm-hmm. You hear about suicide bombers and stuff. And to a certain extent, that is a type of martyrdom, but it's not the same. They don't have, in their religious beliefs, the same type of relationship with God that Christians do. Christians have a personal relationship. When they sacrifice themselves for the sake of God at its highest, it's because they're doing so out of love of God, for a God that they believe loves them in return in totality, to the point that He Himself was the model of all martyrs by sacrificing Himself so that everyone might be saved. Now, not all people choose to correspond and reciprocate, but yes, He is the model of all martyrs.
Bob, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you've hit on the thing where and I know we're coming on a commercial break here. It's that we were looking at it from one aspect as far as obligation and the sort of the good that we get. Mm. But there we are.
No, that's all right. Keep going.
It's love that I think that really explains self-sacrifice and martyrdom in a much deeper way, and I want to actually explain what I mean.
I'd love to hear what you mean by love, and you know, can love truly be completely non-self-interested? I want to get into that point too, because it seems like martyrs, to a certain degree, have to have that. 978-454-4980 is our phone number here at Beneath the Surface Radio on WCAP, where everybody gets it. Got to take another quick break. Be back right after this. And we're back. 978-454-4980. If you want to get involved in our conversation, we would love to have you. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. And here on Beneath the Surface, we are talking about martyrdom and self-sacrifice on this day of Memorial Day 2016. Now, Bob, before the break, you were saying you were underscoring the fact that there is no martyrdom without love.
Right.
But you wanted to unpack this notion of love.
Yes,
and I did. And I'm very fascinated to understand this.
Okay, well, one of the things to understand about love, and is the definition that you have given so often, is one of the willing the good of the other.
Okay.
And that is a really good definition of love, I think, especially the self-sacrificing love. I mean, the erotic love would be more, well, I desire you, you know, not maybe there would be some sort of instance there of saying I will the good of the other person, but it seems to be heavily weighted toward I desire this other person.
Yeah.
And friendship love would be a little bit different. There's this a kind of a commonality between you two. But even what Jesus said there, you know, he talked about friends. There's no greater love than this, than to give one's life for his friends.
And but by and large, with eros love and with philia love, that is attraction love and friendship love, there's a self-interested component.
There is.
So, but with agape love, it's completely non-self-interested. for a selfless sacrifice for the good of the other.
Yeah, I think we could get into some real good rabbit holes and mazes here with talking about what is true self-interest and what is not true self-interest.
Yes.
Or disinterested love. That was one of the things that really bothered me about the philosopher Kant is his total stress on disinterested love. Or disinterested giving of oneself. It seemed to go beyond what I experienced in life. There is always, I think, with human beings, some sort of self-interested component to it. And otherwise, you would not be talking about not understanding self-interest with no afterlife.
I totally agree with that. And I think there is a difference to be made between self-interest and selfishness.
Right. There is.
Yeah. Self-interestedness and selfishness. Now, because, I mean, even the religious person knows that love your neighbor as yourself presumes a love of self.
Right.
And you can't fully or truly love your neighbor if you're not first loving yourself. So a love of self is presumed in agape.
Right.
Okay. So then, when it comes to religious martyrdom, or even secular martyrdom, I'll just throw that out to you. How is love the underlying factor?
Well, I think one of the things to kind of understand about this, especially about love, is that we're not talking about a material thing. We're talking about something that is beyond natural, in the sense that I'm not talking about, you know, something within ourselves. We're talking about something external to ourselves, something that we look at love as a kind of a relationship that stands kind of, this is very Trinitarian, it stands apart from
the lover and the beloved.
The lover and the beloved.
So the love is that which is in between the lover and the beloved.
Right. Okay. And so there's this kind of supernatural aspect that I think is very clear in Christianity, but not so clear outside of Christianity.
But would you say it is etched in our nature, like we said before last break?
I think it is, but the problem here is that as Christians we recognize a fallen nature.
Yes.
Where very much that love that we might have is in some sort of way contaminated or not as pure as it could be or should be, lacking the fall. Okay. And so I think there is a natural sense of self-sacrifice even with atheists.
Right. Sure.
I mean, you can't say that they won't, but I think what you would find is maybe a tendency, or maybe this is wishful thinking, a tendency that Christians would understand love in a much better way and would act accordingly. Of course, we know that Christians fall magnificently just as badly as atheists fall. So I'm not sure if I could make that. But the thing that I guess that we would look to is the startling difference between an atheist and a Christian is the martyrs, and I would even compare the Christian martyrs with martyrs of other faiths, because there seems to be something very, it's like a pacifist, a Christian martyr is like a pacifist. He's not looking to harm anybody else as part of his martyrdom.
Right.
He's just looking and saying, I love God so much, or I love the truth so much.
Yeah.
That I cannot do anything other than what I'm about to do. Whatever you decide to do is not going to change
You don't mean that you're going to do something. You mean you're going to allow somebody to do it to you.
Right, right. Okay. You're standing
because
firm.
You're not going to compromise on the truth and on love.
Right.
Okay.
And so it becomes very, very much different, I think.
Well, obviously it's very, very different than a terrorist martyrdom, for example.
Right.
Because that's usually murder-suicide.
Right.
And so is the kamikaze pilots of World War II, no?
Yes, yes. They were looking to advance the empire, of course, but they were It's not the same thing as a person, a Christian martyr, who says, well, I'm not looking to harm anybody else. I'm just looking to, not to compromise myself, or either in truth or in love.
Now, we look for examples of this in our day, and there aren't all that many, at least not through the media. Maybe in people's personal lives we can come up with some. But, I mean, a popular example that everybody would know, perhaps, would be a Martin Luther King. No?
Yeah, that would be one instance.
Giving up his freedom.
Right.
He went to jail.
Absolutely.
And eventually, recognizing that he might die in the process, and it actually happened.
Yes.
I would say that there's actually a whole lot more than people realize.
In this country,
you don't get a whole lot of press coverage, but I know the Vatican, for example, recognizes that within the 20th century alone, there were more martyrs, Christian martyrs, than all the other 1900 centuries before that combined. Now, of course, there was more people in general, but when you consider all the political strife, all the everything that was going on in there, and then you add up the body count, so to speak, vast amounts. I mean, for example, Maximilian Kolbe in World War II, I mean, he was just one of many, many martyrs that happened during there. Many people that were killed weren't martyrs.
Right.
That's not to say that death equates martyrdom, but in the sense that there were many that did actually give their lives because they refused to cooperate with evil.
Mm. Well, that you actually brought up a very good one, I think, that a lot of people don't know about the secular government that happened in Mexico. And,
right.
And you had people who died saying, long live Christ, actually in Spanish, but they said, long live Christ, as they were being executed.
Viva Cristo Rey.
Yes.
So Christian martyrdom relates to, and I kind of like something you just said, John. It relates to somebody who refuses to cooperate in any way with evil.
Yes.
And when you refuse to cooperate with evil, and somebody with a gun or a knife doesn't like the fact that you refuse it, especially if they're part of the government, things might happen.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see is something that they call white martyrdom. I think this is
in our country.
In our country, it's not actually going to be, or maybe it will be. Who knows? But right now, I think what we're foreseeing is a white martyrdom rather than actually spilling our blood.
But what are you talking about foreseeing? I mean, haven't we been experiencing white martyrdom for a number of decades now?
Well, I think we're on the cusp of that. I'm talking about the Little Sisters of the Poor, where they're going to say, you either comply with these government regulations or you can't serve the poor.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly more in the media now. The Little Sisters, the cake makers, those kinds of people that are in the media spotlight. But I think it's been happening a lot that if you truly stand up for the politically incorrect truth, you are going to get some serious ramifications thrown at you.
I agree. I think that's always been true to a certain extent. I think there's always been people who have, for whatever reason, they don't like Christians and they want to make life difficult for them. As far as those people actually being in control of government, we're talking about something recent rather than something that's...
I would say relatively recent, yes. I would agree with that. But in control of academia?
Yes.
In control of the media? No, I don't think that's recent. That's been decades old.
Yeah, I'm with Paul on this. In fact, I would venture to say that in the very near future, and I think very realistically within our lifetime, the political climate would be ripe, shall we say, for actual red martyrdom on U.S. shores.
What was the famous quote of Cardinal George? Does anybody remember?
Yeah,
he just passed away.
I will die in my bed. My successor will die in jail, and his successor will...
die in the streets, I think.
Yeah,
die in the streets as a martyr.
And he added on to it. He added on to that because he thought that wasn't a good way to finish. You know, the blogs on the internet picked up on that. Mm. But he said, and then their successors will pick up the broken shards of the civilization and piece it all back together again.
Their successors, yeah.
Their successors.
Yeah, the churches, yeah.
So he's predicting that not the church will fall, but actually Western civilization would fall.
Exactly. Exactly. Very interesting. Well, this is Memorial Day, and we would be remiss if we did not right now at least verbally honor those who have died for the service of their country.
Well, I think actually the start of Memorial Day was actually started from the battles of Gettysburg. And Lincoln's Gettysburg Address so richly describes it. He talks about looking back at the honored dead whose broken bodies had consecrated the ground of the Battle of Gettysburg. He used very highly religious language.
Yes.
And then he talked about we should rededicate ourselves looking into the future to carry on the task that they so nobly advanced.
Yeah. Well, let us give honor and thanks to all of those who have died for us. I think we also should mention the biggest number of martyrs in our day, if you could call them that. And I think there's reason to, the unborn. And I guess it all makes sense if you look at the ultimate martyr himself, who died 2,000 years ago for the salvation of mankind. Doesn't that sort of put into context any and all martyrdom?
It does. He's the model of all martyrs, and the degree to which they are good martyrs is the degree in which they imitate Jesus.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, everybody, for listening. A happy Memorial Night. And right after this, Cindy's Vinyl Vaults. See you all next week. Take care.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tours Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.